Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another amazing episode of the Over Sharon Show. You know, we've been really knocking them out of the park lately. I just want to take some time to pat ourselves on the back because we've had some amazing guests and we have another amazing guest today. I'm really excited about it. But before we get into that, I'd like to just give a shout out to the chat. What's going on, everybody? Thank you guys so much. If you want to support us, go to morelawsmoreproblems.com. Click on the Over Sharon tab. And there's several ways to support us. But the best way to support us is to just leave a comment wherever you're listening to this. Oh, that's what I wanted to say, too. We're on Podbean now, which means we're on iTunes and Spotify and Amazon. We're all over the place. So if you just Audible. Like to listen, Audible, if you just like to listen to these, go check them out, subscribe, leave a review. And like I said, leave a comment under this video. Those are really our favorite ways to get supported, is just let know that people are listening and that we're resonating, and especially if you have a question.
Yeah. And I want to interject just quickly to say that,
please do,
because it's almost been a year, and I can't believe it, that we started the podcast, that we started with episode 21 on the Podbean. So we'll find a way to get the old ones back on somehow. Maybe we'll do like little replays or features or something, but
yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. And if you want to listen to any of the old episodes, they're all on YouTube, or you can get in our Telegram channel and we have all the audios and the videos of every single episode in there. So if you guys want to catch up on your oversharing, that's the best way. All right, today's quote is by Lao Tzu: the flame that burns twice as bright burns half as long.
Nice.
All right, I'm going to pull a card here. Ooh, this is it. This one again. The Two of Swords. Let's see if... there we go. Yeah, okay. So very interesting card. And in this deck, it shows the angels, one on each side, in the background above her. So it's kind of like the, you know, the two sides of your mind, I guess, speaking. She's blindfolded, but you could see it's like really loose, so she could still kind of see. The Two of Swords, I usually say, represents two ideas. It could be a choice that you have to make. And the way I like to interpret it, though, is it could be two ideas, two modes of thinking, but it could be something that you use to your advantage. It's like somebody who wields two swords instead of one very effectively. So they're twice as dangerous.
Well, you know, I mean, it reminds me of, you said it's the flame that burns twice as bright. So there's that whole two, the twice thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well. So that lady's probably not going to live as long, but, you know, she's going to have a fun life. So it's cool. I don't want to make claims.
We don't make claims here on the Over Sharon Show.
Except for that claim.
Oh, we don't like to.
Why don't you introduce our guest, Sharon? You're so good at it.
Thank you. So we have today the famous Woodshop Bear of the Beartaria Times. And I didn't really know Woodshop Bear in person. In fact, this is the first time we actually have a one-on-one like video chat. And the reason I know him is I was following his profile on the Beartaria Times and just kind of just like living vicariously through him, if one could say, with the things that he was doing, fun stuff that we might talk about in a little bit. But like, you know, he was doing coloring books, selling them on Amazon, like just coming up with them like boom, 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 really. And then just like releasing them on Amazon for sale, and then doing things like freeze drying food and sharing it with the community by donation, things like that. So I was following his channel. That's how I knew him. But most recently, I was in a chat with him and some other fellas from, I should say, other people that are Olive Tree Bear fans, shall we say. And so I've been in a group chat with him. So I've gotten to know him even more on that level, just like you get to know people like that when you're in a group chat with him. So that's kind of how I've gotten to know him. But I know Brandon kind of knew him a little bit better because I believe Brandon ordered a pen from him because he is a woodshop bear and he has a woodshop. And also Brandon did a Hanging with Bears episode with him. So I knew Brandon and he had talked before and they knew each other. So this is Woodshop Bear. And pardon my throat. I don't know what's going on. Hi, Woodshop Bear.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to do this. Brandon and I talked about me potentially doing one of these quite some time ago, but it just life got crazy and it never panned out. So I'm really excited that you guys had me on.
And I must say, because I forgot, that the reason it happened so quickly at this point is because Woodshop Bear, his name is Nick, posted or sent a letter to Owen, and Owen read it on one of the recent streams. And if anybody remembers that, let me know, but I'll go look it up. And so Brandon saw that stream, sent me the clip, or sent me like where to listen. And I heard it and it was really good. It was about narcissism and how it affects people. You know, we can all relate. Brandon and I did an episode about narcissism specifically. So Brandon wanted to have him on our show at least. And so I thought it was a great idea. So here we are, Brandon.
Here we are. Well, first of all, I'd like to say I love Nick because of his, I guess you should say, attitude or personality. His humor is totally up my alley. And I always liked his interactions in whenever he'd be talking to Owen, like in the chat that they have going on. It's just really, it reminds me of like a lot of friends that I grew up with and stuff. So I'm excited. And then when we had that conversation, it was amazing. I mean, it felt like we could have just kept talking forever. So once I heard your letter, I was like, oh, Sharon, we have to get him on the show, because we were actually just talking about narcissism again recently. I forget who it was with, but what he said, especially with the adrenaline addiction, it really blew my mind because I've never thought about that aspect of it. So it was something that opened me up to something new. And we'll put the link to the clip of the letter below so people can go check it out and watch that. So what was the first thing that really kind of got you into? Well, you know, I guess we wanted to talk a little bit about your history a little bit, and then we'll get into that letter. But yeah, I do want to ask you what kind of prompted you to start looking into that stuff. I would imagine it's your life.
It is indeed. So I've had what some would consider a rough life. It's all relative though. You know, it's all about perspective and how you cope with adversity in life. But, from my perspective, it's definitely been rough. You know, I grew up in New Hampshire on 120 acres for the first 6-7 years of my life. And it was, I mean, as rural as you could get. You know, we were an hour away from the closest town or anything, and then moved to the diametrically opposite into Portland, Oregon, which is just, you know, it's a city, but it's also like it's Portland, Oregon. So it's just nuts. And that's where I've been ever since. I've been here for 25, 26 years or so. But growing up, you know, I had siblings, I had an older sister, I had two younger brothers. We had foster children in the house all the time. So it was weird. It was a weird childhood. I was raised in a way where I was taught very important values. You know, like if anybody ever needs food, you feed them. There's no questions asked. You help people in this world. If everybody in your home has to eat a little bit less so that somebody else can eat with you, then that's what you do, because we help people. But at the same time, I grew up with a passive aggressive father who bottled stuff up and then would just unleash anger. I grew up with a mother who was beautiful in so many ways and still is today. But you know, when you're in a failing relationship, failing marriage, and you have, you know, four children together, their ugly sides come out. So you know, as many people have said, I was made privy to a lot of things that a child shouldn't be at a young age. financial stresses and worrying about, you know, oh, we can't make rent. Are we going to get evicted? How are we going to keep the lights on? So already that adrenaline cycle started building in me, you know, no 8-year-old should be worrying about having to scrounge up change and trying to give it to their parents to try to help with rent. You know, that's not a natural childhood.
Yeah.
And it's not because they weren't working. They worked hard. They worked split shifts opposite from each other. My dad was doing construction. My mom was going to school full time and she was working in retirement homes. She worked her way from a CNA all the way up to the like head marketing director, making a decent salary. They were both hardworking. It's the times, man. Some people are just poor, you know, like it doesn't matter what you do. You just, life just keeps knocking you down. So yeah, I was made privy to a lot of stuff and that kind of started the cycle. And then when I was 12 years old, my father left, found another woman and he was gone. So then my mom sat me down and was like, you're the man of the house now. You're the oldest boy. And I'm 12 years old going like, I'm trying to focus on not puking and shitting my pants while I walk by girls. I can't be put into this role, you know, like this is the worst time for this to happen. But I think I just embraced it and did the best that I could with it and helped as much as I could in that role while I was still in the home. And then, you know, my wife and I met when I was 13. We went on a school trip together to Mexico for 2 weeks. It's the first time we'd ever talked. I was smitten with her from day one. Obviously, she's beautiful.
Of course.
I look, you know, in that letter, I said I look like Shrek and she's just stunning. And that is the truth. I mean, she's so far out of my league. It's wild. But she's just a beautiful person in general.
Yes.
But we, you know, we knew each other. We were just best friends all throughout high school. And then senior year, we finally got together and we've been together ever since. So almost 17 years now we've been together. But you know, she helped me through a lot of that stuff, but she also had a crazy childhood as well. You know, she had parents that were, her dad was a rock and roll and motorcycle gang in and out of prison, you know, meth user, and her mom was a raging alcoholic. So she had her own issues as well. So us coming together in this life was a beautiful thing. And the amount of sinks from our childhoods leading up to us knowing each other are insane, but it brought a lot of comfort, but then also there's two very damaged people. So we both have our own issues we've been trying to work through. And it's just that letter that I wrote to Owen is kind of like a brief, very brief. I could have written a book and sent it to him, but I sent him a message and said, what's your page count on these letters, bro? Cause this thing's going on 6 pages and I don't want to like stress you out. And he just said, send it all. So, but it's kind of like a culmination of all of my observations. Cause I've been a very deep thinker ever since I was a baby. My mom used to say I wouldn't, and not in an autistic way, but like, I would just sit there and observe. I would just sit there and look at something, you know, for 30, 40 minutes. And then finally, once I had made up my mind about how I felt about that thing, then I would go and engage, or I would explain to her what I was thinking or whatever. But I've always been artistic since I was a child. My mom said when I was, I think, 18 months old, she left me with some crayons and she came back and I had drawn like a perfect train, like with the, like a old locomotive too, you know, like not a bullet train or anything, but I had like coal cars and I had the steam engines and everything at 18 months old, which is just insane. You know, like my daughter,
ridiculous.
My daughter's, our youngest daughter is 2 and she's now just figuring out how to start drawing shapes. But she said that it gave her goosebumps and she actually felt scared. And then she called my dad in and my dad will attest to this too. And he said that it's one of the scariest things he's ever seen because he's like, you are 18 months old. You shouldn't have been able to even hold a pen. And I came in and you were drawing perfect train. So I've always had that artistic, really deep thinking way about me. And all of these things regarding adrenaline and narcissism and just that cycle, it seems to be like 30. Today's my birthday. I'm 34. And it seems to be like, thank you.
Happy birthday.
It seems to be like 34 years of thoughts that are just kind of starting to find places for them, how they piece together. So
you're so very mature for 34. That's amazing. Very Thank amazing you. Story.
Yeah, yeah, I totally forgot because I think we talked about our ages last time. But when I asked you, because you said it was going to be your birthday today and you said 34, I was like, holy shit, I forgot about that. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
The best part about 30, that, too, is
34 you have, going on 100.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You old curmudgeon bastard. No, we have, it's like you have all these years ahead of you now that you can actually could write a book if you wanted to, or all these things, you know, I mean, you could start use that letter as a base to write a whole book. I would imagine. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be interested, especially after they watch this show. Yeah, exactly. That so I know that you sent Owen some messages because I think he was reading or he posted something on his Instagram or something that you had sent him that kind of prompted you to write this letter. But how long have you been looking into all this stuff? Is this something you just dove into recently, or have you been looking into this for like a very long time?
Yeah. So when I was 20 years old, I had a horrific car accident. So just to summarize that, at the time I worked at Greenpeace, I was a little, you know, hippie stoner, and I was out there saving forests and polar bears, right? And I was driving home from work, and there was a woman and her boyfriend were on PCP and heroin, and they were driving, and I'm driving this way, and it was on a highway, and they hopped over onto oncoming traffic at a break in the cement median. And I was driving home and I saw them. I was in the fast lane. So I got over to the middle lane. They got to the middle lane. And I was the first car in the line of cars behind me. And I'm doing about 50 and they're doing about 50. And I had just passed a car full of, like a van full of little kids. I had seen car seats and stuff. And 50 miles coming at each other, you close that distance really quick. It was probably maybe an eighth of a mile in between us, and that passed in a few seconds. But at the very last second, I was like, all right, I guess it's me, and just whipped my steering wheel to the side, put my car sideways in front of that car, and they smashed into me, spun me a 360. I smashed into the cement median. So like my body's whipping everywhere, right? And then I finally, like, I cracked my head on the pillar of the car. So this was when I was 20 years old. Fast forward about 6 months, I walked away from that accident without any visible damage other than a bruised shoulder from the seatbelt. But about 6 months later, I started developing this just debilitating headache, and it didn't go away. And after a month of this, I wasn't able to go to work anymore. I wasn't able to do anything. I was just laying in bed all day long, just writhing in pain. So I started seeing a chiropractor, and they said, you've got all these injuries, like your neck is messed up. And, so that obviously brought on a bit of depression at the time. Cause I was like, I just went from being 20 and just crushing at Greenpeace. I was the best canvasser that Greenpeace had ever had, literally breaking records in all of Greenpeace USA history. They were getting ready to fly me out to Washington, D.C. to completely rewrite the training program for Greenpeace because my signups were so crazy and people were actually staying on. They weren't signing up and then canceling a month later, right? Like, I was doing something right and I was inspiring people to stay on. And so I went from that to just being laid up on a couch. So some depression started to settle in. And then fast forward maybe another 6 months, and I thought I was going crazy. I started sliding into this feeling really disassociated with the world. I didn't feel like I was here. I felt like I was watching a movie. I was watching things happen around me, but something inside of me didn't feel right. And I didn't feel like I had control of my own body at that point. There was this huge disconnect going on. And that continued for years. And I won't even get into it because I'll just say it's the closest that I could ever say is like hell on earth. I mean, being that detached from your body, having no control over it, both physically, you know, because all of the nerve damage done in my neck, it it's in your neck. It goes through your whole body. So nothing feels like it's felt your whole life. But then on top of that, you have the emotional aspect as well, and the mental of being depressed and having this anxiety that you don't know where it's coming from. Because at the time I was 20, I didn't have any idea of the mind-body connection or spirituality or any of this stuff. I was just a young, naive kid. And so I felt like I was going crazy. I couldn't feel emotions. I didn't feel like I was sleeping. I'd sleep for 10 hours and wake up and just be in the same state of panic that I fell asleep in. And this continued for 5 years until my wife and my mother finally talked me into going to see a counselor. And it was to the point where I was legitimately suicidal in that time. Because when you feel like, I don't know, it sounds like cliche and kind of dramatic, but it's really true. Like my wife, who was my girlfriend back then, would tell me that she would love me. And I just felt dead inside. I felt nothing. And I was like, I have no joy being around children anymore. I have no joy being around my family. I'm not playing guitar anymore. I'm not drawing anymore. I'm not doing anything except for sitting here all day, just spiraling in panic, constant fight or flight. And so, yeah, there came a point where I was suicidal. I had notes written out, you know, to the few loved ones. And I just sat in a bathroom, and I don't know if this is too graphic, but
no,
holding a razor. Yeah. Just holding a razor, and just, that was probably the scariest point in my life, because I didn't feel anything. I was sitting there and I was just like holding it to my wrist. And I was like, I don't even feel sad about this. You know, like, what is going on? And, thank God, literally, thank God, something passed through me and I got goosebumps and just got told, don't do this. And, then shortly after that, they talked me into going to see a therapist. And I didn't tell anybody about that till many years later that I got to that point. But they talked me into going to a therapist, and I went to see one. And she said, within our first visit, oh, you 100% have like severe PTSD. And I said, I don't even know what that is. What are you even talking about? Again, 20, you know, young 20s. I don't know anything about anything at that point.
Right.
So she starts explaining it to me. And then I go, I don't have that. I wasn't in war. You know, like, I didn't just come back from Iraq. I don't have PTSD. That's what people get when they get, you know, run over an IED or something. Cause I had no understanding of what it was. And then I looked into it further and was like, oh, this is possible. It's not just war. It's oftentimes very acute, severe trauma that causes it. And it can happen from long-term trauma, but those real acute trauma episodes often can lead to it. And so I started seeing her, and at that same time I had brain scans done, and they had found that my amygdala, which is a small part of your brain that processes certain stimuli, but mainly focuses on your emotions and how your body deals with those emotions. Literally, like, it controls the adrenaline release, right? It tells your adrenal glands to either release adrenaline or that you're safe. My amygdala was not functioning and had shrunk like 8%. So the very thing that controls the release of adrenaline was not working in me. So I just had a constant adrenaline drip into my body. And the amygdala also helps with sleep. And I had tests done, and it was my therapist at that time that I was seeing kind of corroborated that with post-traumatic stress disorder that is that severe. And just given the number of symptoms that I was having and everything that I was seeing or that I was saying, that I had most likely not had a cycle of REM sleep for over 4 years. And anybody that knows about REM sleep, like, that's when your brain kind of categorizes all the stimuli that you take in during the day, dispels of what is unneeded or unnecessary. And that's how you process things, you know? So you can imagine the better part of 5 years, everything that I saw, every taste, every smell, everything that I touched or touched me, every emotion, everything. It was this backlog that had not been processed, right? So I start having this treatment done called EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization and reprogramming. Because in REM cycle, your eyes are, you know, flicking everywhere as your brain is processing stuff. I wasn't having REM sleep. So what we did is when I was awake and conscious, there was a board that had all these little LEDs on it. And there was one LED lit up, and that LED would just rocket back and forth in these eye movement patterns. And my job was to sit there and watch this LED while also at the same time talking about the accident that I was in, talking about my current fears, talking about my anxieties and what was making me depressed, so that it kind of jump started that cycle back up again. And man, I'll tell you what, that first time that I did that, I went home and I slept for 5 days straight. I woke up to eat and use the bathroom, and then I was asleep. And it was not restful sleep. It was tormenting nightmares. It was reliving the accident. It was like remembering things that my mind had just completely walled off and I had no recollection of. So the good thing though, is that after I left that first treatment, I got to the car and just bawled. My mom had driven me to that appointment and I just started bawling. It was the first time I had cried in probably 5 years, like truly cried, but not a bad one. It was like, I felt hope again. It was like, I felt this little twinge in my brain of something had been fired back up. This is a long story. Sorry, but it's
no, gonna, this is great. Are you kidding
me? I love it. Oversharing.
Yeah. This is awesome.
So I have this done and I'm seeing her every week, and I end up doing this for about 6 months, this EMDR treatment. Every time I feel a little bit better. Every time I'm sleeping for a week afterwards, but that's to be expected because, excuse me, you've got 5 years of pent up thoughts and emotions and stimuli that you need to process, right?
Yeah.
So after about 6 months, I feel like I've gotten what I need out of it. I'm sleeping again. I feel rested. I'm not anxious like I was. And just to set the bar here, okay, everybody says that they have anxiety on some level at some point in their life, or depression. My anxiety was, I was in such a state of fight or flight. And it was the way that my the therapist then described it, was basically I was locked into that moment right before impact. Like that, I was stuck in that moment. My body was stuck in there. You know, biologically, I was producing the same adrenaline, pumping it into my body. I was always tensed up, just like I was before the impact. But my mind was also stuck in that moment as well, of absolute chaos and trying to find some order in it, but realizing I'm about to die. And my mother is 10 miles behind me. My wife is 10 miles in front of me. I'm right here in this car alone. Nobody's going to be able to get to me in time. It was stuck in that trauma. And so I have this EMDR done, and just to set the bar of where my anxiety level was, sorry, I forgot where I was going with that. I used to not be able to take a shower unless my wife was home, because I was so terrified because I didn't have control over my body. And what I mean by that is I would have heart palpitations because the vagus nerve in my neck was crushed, which controls your heartbeat and your blood pressure and your breathing. I didn't know that at the time. I just thought I was going crazy. So I thought I was going to have a heart attack, and it was too anxiety inducing for me to take a shower, because the way that my brain had become accustomed to working was no, because if you get in the shower and you have a heart attack and there's nobody there to hear you, then you're not going to be able to get help. And then you're going to die. And then, you know, your wife's going to find you and she's going to, it's irrational, right? It's 100% irrational, but it didn't feel that way in the moment. It was more real than anything else that I was feeling. I could not drive a vehicle without having a legitimate panic attack and not being able to breathe. I had to pull over all the time. I wouldn't drive a car unless I had 911 pre-dialed on my phone and I held it in my hand, ready to push that green button just to make a phone call. I couldn't leave the house. I couldn't be in social settings. I couldn't do anything. I mean, the person that you see today is so wildly different than who I was then. So long story short is, like, throughout that time, I was unaware that I was building up this tolerance to adrenaline. and becoming dependent on it, because I wasn't even thinking that way. I didn't even know what adrenaline really was, you know, like I didn't know what any of this stuff was. I was a young kid, but I was experiencing it. And then after I have this EMDR treatment done, there was a time where we were living with my mother for a year during that. And then my wife and I moved out, we got our own apartment, and a lot of that anxiety was gone, right? I was able to drive then. I enrolled myself in school, in college, because I was like, I've been sitting around for 5 years. I got to do something with my life. So I enrolled myself in college, and we got a couple dogs and everything was going great. But I was like, when things are calm, I'm very uncomfortable. That's when the panic sets in the most. You know, when I'm in tense situations, I feel really calm. But then when things are calm, I'm like frantically spiraling in my head. And from that point on, it took a few years for me to kind of figure out what was going on. And I had to do that by myself. I only saw that therapist for about 6 months to do that treatment specifically. And then I haven't done therapy since then, but I had to figure it all out by myself. Just tons of reading, tons of work, changing diet, you know, looking for any answer as to why I'm still having this feeling of fight or flight. Tons of spiritual work, tons, like studying everything, Buddhism and Hinduism and Christianity and Islam, everything that I could get my hands on, I was reading, trying to find an answer to this. And eventually it clicked for me. Right. And that's the funny thing is you look back in life and you go, well, it should have clicked for just in general. But for me, it only clicked for me that I'm feeling this because I became addicted to it unknowingly. But when you have a chemical being released in your body for half of your life, you're going to develop an addiction and a tolerance to it. But that addiction and tolerance is still there, even though I've dealt with a lot of the trauma that was the precursor to it affecting me, that addiction is still there. So then it was just having to, honestly, it wasn't that hard. I mean, you'd think that it would be hard, but once you know you have an issue, it's so much easier to deal with. And I realized that that's what was going on. And I'm, as I said in that letter to Owen, like I'm the type of person, when I see a problem, I just start swinging just to get it over with. You know, like I smoked for a long time, cigarettes. When I quit, I just go cold turkey, like just get it over with. It's going to suck either way, you know? So for me, I'm like, I have this unwanted and unintentional adrenaline addiction. So how do I get rid of that? Well, I'm noticing that I'm the most stressed out and the most anxious during the times where things are calm. So I need to completely readjust my entire life and try to make everything calm, because that's how I think life should be anyways. That's what you should strive for. You should never go out looking for chaos, you know. But so then it became many years of me actively trying to get rid of chaos in my life and welcome those calm times where I'm able to just sit and think about life, because I'm a deep thinker. That's what I do. I can sit there for hours on a porch swing, just sitting there looking at a tree, just thinking. And so yeah, it's been a long journey, and I feel like this adrenaline stuff, as I said earlier, it clicked for me, but I wasn't able to apply it to other people for some reason. But that's life, you know, one veil lifts and you think that you're all of a sudden woke and based, but you don't realize there's a million more behind it. And they come up when they're supposed to, or when you do the work. And then every single time you look back and you go, you are such a stupid little shit. Like you thought you had it all figured out. And that's how I thought that's how I felt. I thought that I had it figured out because I had applied everything that I had learned about adrenaline addiction and narcissism to myself, and I was able to conquer it in my own way, but then I wasn't able to apply it to other people. And what's happened recently is, like, you know, another veil lifted, and you look at society and you look at loved ones and you look at all of the mistakes or perceived mistakes that they're making, right? And all of the, what is perceived as intentional chaos that they're creating in this world. And we often go, well, that's just, they're a narcissist, you know, like they get off on chaos. No, they don't. No, they don't. They might try to tell themselves that they do, because it's easier to say that than to admit that they are a damaged child inside who has put up 1,000 walls and don't want to let anybody into those walls, because that's even more potential pain. And they hit their tolerance when they were 7 or 8 years old and they can't bear the thought of ever having any more pain. But, you know, it's all lies, man. Like, we're all kids at heart. And, you know, the Bible tells us as children, we will enter the kingdom of heaven, and only as children. Like, I'm this is such a long rant and I'm going into so many things, but
no, this is totally great. Right. Are you kidding me? I'm just like,
so like, I've written down a lot of things I want to touch on. Keep going.
Yeah. But like, time as we understand it doesn't exist, and it's an illusion. And people often, they disassociate their inner child as if it's something or someone in the past that is no longer them. And that's something that I've said repeatedly on podcasts, is you are still that exact same person. Your body looks a little bit different and you've had more experiences in this realm. You're still that same exact person. So when you say, oh, something that happened back then is obviously not affecting me now because I'm a different person, you're not. You're literally the same person. Trauma that happened when you're a child is still affecting you today. And everything that you are today is like an accumulation of defense mechanisms that you put into place, be it consciously or subconsciously, to shield you from any more trauma coming in. Because every child, I mean, I have 2 children, they're 2 and 3 and a half. They're not concerned with trauma because they don't get it. You know, they're not concerned with putting walls up and trying to create this fake persona for themselves, for the public, you know, so that they don't get hurt. A lot of things that we see that are socially acceptable and that even we laugh at, you know, like self-deprecating comedy, where someone's really going at themselves. People need to understand that although it can be funny, like I admit, I laugh at that stuff every once in a while because someone will crack a joke and it's funny, right? And it could be a good release for that person or whatever, but at its core, once you break down all the superficial stuff on top, that's a person who's feels like they have such little control and they're so scared of getting hurt that they think that if they hurt themselves, then they won't be a target for other people, right? So it's like, and there's obviously levels to this stuff. I joke about myself all the time, right? Because there's an element of it that can be done in an innocent way where you're just trying to bring somebody joy and you're riffing with each other. But the people who really, really are self-deprecating, that's a defense mechanism. You know, oftentimes we see people that we would classify as narcissists using manipulation. That's a defense mechanism. That's trying to gain control over the situation because they had no control or stability in their childhood. So now they're overcompensating in adulthood and they don't trust anybody. So yeah, I mean, recently the past couple months, I've just been looking at the world and looking at people. And I think it's a great time to do it after the nonsense that we just saw for the last 2, 2.5 years, to really examine this world and society and people in general and see what makes people tick and why they're doing things. And every single time that I do this, it leads back to childhood. And I will stick to that for the rest of my life. It'll never change. It all starts in the home. It all starts with how you're brought up. It starts with the amount of trauma that you have in your life, what kind of trauma that is, how that trauma is dealt with. You know what? My daughter's 3 and a half. We have a small swimming pool in our backyard. It's like one of those, you know, 6-foot swimming pools. Yeah, play pools. So there's all of 6 or 7 inches of standing water in it, right? But they're tiny, so they love it. And yesterday, I think she was jumping around and she fell and her face went under the water, right? It's the first time that's ever happened to her, where her face just unintentionally got submerged. she came up screaming and crying. She was terrified. So, because she's never experienced that before. So, you know, that could be seen as like, oh, that's kind of a traumatic event. That was the first time it ever happened. It terrified you, whatever. My wife and I, as parents, we don't like harp on it. We don't make it a big deal. We just try to calm her down and say, oh yeah, you know, validate the emotions that the kid is feeling 100%. You don't want to tell them that they're crazy or anything. So validate what they're feeling, but then also, you know, just make it, it's not a big deal. It's just water. It was a little bit scary, but you're okay. Remind them that they're okay. And then move on. A lot of kids don't get that. A lot of kids don't get that. They get brutally abused or emotionally neglected. And then we wonder why we have a society of narcissists walking around. So.
Very, very true. So enlightening. A lot of things you said made me take a lot of notes. brought on a lot of things that I wanted to touch on. Fear, mainly. I mean, you're talking about people who have been exposed to traumatic events and things like that. I've heard of this concept of complex PTSD when it's not just one huge traumatic event that happens, but that a series of traumatic experiences over time, just like, what is it called when you like cut the thousand cuts? What is that?
Oh, death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah. Death by a thousand cuts type thing. That's what complex PTSD is about. And then you talked about the amygdala, and it reminded me of what I've heard James True talk about on the Crow Tribble set and also on his own shows, but like he talks about the amygdala and how it's, it allows you to see what you're, like what you're able to see.
What you're able to handle, kind of, right?
Say it again.
Kind of like what you're able to handle. It only shows you what it thinks you can handle, right?
Right. But like when something's not right, it could potentially like just allow like too much in. And like you said, you were just like flushed with all these feelings of all these adrenaline rushes. And that was, it became an addiction, you know, unbeknownst to you. And then the EMDR stuff, it's interesting because I had heard people say EMDR before. And it was only recently, and maybe it was because of your letter or something, but it's the EMDR is like the series of lights that make your eyes pretend like they're going back into REM sleep, and right, REM.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you can release these emotions potentially and process them and allow the body to actually process them. That is so, so fascinating. It made me think of, because I feel like this eye thing is kind of a sink, because just recently in the last couple of weeks, I came across this guy's work. He's an iridologist and he's actually local to here, the Phoenix metropolitan area in Arizona. And I just watched one of his interviews. It wasn't very long. It was like probably 30 minutes, but he just talked about interesting things about the eyes. And I feel like he mentioned EMDR, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it was through him that I understood what EMDR was finally, but there was something else he said, and it made me think of you, you made me think of it because of you were saying like when you were crying, it was a different crying than a crying of like sadness or whatever. But so what this guy was saying, I forgot his last name, but I think his name is Jim. He was saying that tears of joy actually come out the sides of your eyes instead of the insides. So when you're crying tears, like notice maybe next time what type of tears you're having. And if they're coming out of here, then they're tears of joy, which I thought was very, very fascinating.
That's a trip. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I hadn't either.
Wow.
And he's what they call a behavioral or what he calls himself, a behavioral iridologist. And he can look in your eyes and he can tell a lot of things by your eyes. And it's I feel like it's very related. It's interesting because I was actually thinking about him this morning and thinking to myself, like, maybe I should go see him and have a consultation, because I think that would be very enlightening. But something else that you mentioned about like being alone and showering alone and like worrying about what would happen if something were to happen right now, no one's around. I have just a mild experience of that, but it's not like I had it. Wasn't super traumatic like yours, but there was one time, because I have mentioned this on a previous episode, maybe a couple, that I used to have this thing called laryngospasms, where my throat, my voice box would actually close up and for multiple seconds at a time. And I couldn't, like, my voice box was just like, I could breathe as if through like a skinny straw, like those like coffee straws. Like I would have to be like, and it was very traumatic. So it happened to me one time. I was in the shower and I like was like, what is going to happen to me if I don't, like, what if I collapse in this shower from like not being able to breathe? And it was kind of scary. That was one of the worst ones I ever had too at the time. It was several years back, but that hasn't returned for some time. So I'm very thankful for that. But the other thing that you said, I'm sorry, I'm going through my notes, reminding myself of the things you talked about and what they reminded me of. So you said something about you felt like you had like an answer, you found an answer for yourself, but not, you felt like it didn't apply to other people. And this is something that Brandon and I have been talking about in recent episodes, about the collective answer and like the individual answer, because there's this concept that like that pervades society right now, that there's a collective answer for everyone. You know, everyone, and this is like the thing that's really, it's sometimes a little bit annoying, because you'll see like, everybody should be, you know, vegetarian, or everybody should be carnivore. No, they should be this, or they should be that, or, you know this, know that. And then it's like, what if it is the case that every actual individual body is a little different? And
now, what if you were made with intent by a creator for a purpose? Dare you. Yeah.
Yep. Right. So what if vegetarianism works for them, and they feel their best when they're vegetarian? And what if carnivore works for someone else? Like, it, there is no collective answer for anything. Every life, every step of the way is individual. And so I really resonated when you talked about the whole, like, you found something for yourself, but it didn't apply to other people.
Yeah. And I can expand on that just a little bit. What I meant by that was, I went in that moment when it registered for me that I was doing all of these things because of trauma and adrenaline addiction. It made sense then. And I was able to let go of a lot of the guilt and the shame that I had been harboring for many years, because in those moments, when you are that deathly terrified, even if it is 100% irrational and it's being caused by trauma and adrenaline and cortisol and stuff, you can say things that are very hurtful, which I've done a lot of in my life. You can make very poor decisions, which I have done a lot of in my life. You can really hurt other people, which I have unfortunately done a lot of in my life. And not saying that, I don't take responsibility for it, but once you realize that it's not happening because you have this black soul, but instead because you're trying to deal with trauma and you've got this chemical being pumped into your brain and you don't even know it's happening, you're able to let go of a little bit of that guilt and shame and say, I wasn't in my right state of mind. Obviously, I had all of these outside forces working against me, and not only just the trauma and the adrenaline, but if you don't think that there are actual dark demonic figures trying to get into your psyche while you're in that state and break you even more, you're wrong, straight up. Like, you're wrong. There's forces in this world that are trying to break you nonstop. And if they see that you're injured, a lion goes for the injured animal. They don't go for the biggest, strongest one. So you become vulnerable in that time for spiritual attacks, and they can get in there and, they whisper, and they get you to think things that you really don't think. And it's just a slow downward spiral into morphing you into a person that you were never intended to be. And so when I found that answer for me, I was like, oh, okay, this is why I'm doing these things. It makes perfect sense logically. It explains why all of this has happened. But then I wasn't able to look at other people through those same lenses of forgiveness. And because then somebody would do something to me that would hurt me, and I'd immediately jump to, oh, what a piece of shit. That person just wants to hurt me. That they're doing XYZ. And I wasn't able to, in the moment, apply that and say, that person's also a child. That person's also a damaged child. I don't think that they woke up this morning intending to hurt me. I think that they probably have their long laundry list of problems just as I do. And then that's, it's been a slow slide into understanding that over the years, but it really hit me recently, looking at people and being like, I don't think anybody really wants to hurt anybody. I really don't believe that. I think that people are just trying to hurt other people before they can hurt them. And that's something from their childhood that needs to be worked through, and all these fears that we have. You had, one of the notes you had written was fear. Fear is a crazy thing. Like, fear is, the way that I look at it is, whatever you're like most scared of in life is where you trust God the least. And that's, I've just been reminding myself of that for a couple of years now, and just being like, okay, you're really scared of getting evicted or not having a roof over your head. Well, then you don't trust that God's going to provide for you shelter. Maybe work on that instead of spending all day spiraling about it. If you're worried about where your next meal is going to come from, then you don't trust your creator to give you nutrition and sustenance. Like, those are the very fundamentals in this life that you should be trusting in your creator for. But then at the same time, it makes sense. I grew up poor. Like, I grew up dirt poor. I grew up where dinner was like white rice and a can of like green peas, And if we were balling that week, we'd throw a pound of like ground hamburger in it, for some protein. And we didn't get pizza. We got bread with tomato paste and like a Kraft singles slice on it, And we didn't have a lot growing up. So I developed like a really unhealthy relationship with food at a very young age. And it was born out of never feeling like there was enough. And even if you were physically eating enough, it's like Kraft singles are not giving you the nutrition that your growing body needs. You're not getting the protein and all of those micro macronutrients and everything you need. And so I still to this day, like, it's much better now, but even a few years ago, I still had that unhealthy relationship and that fear inside of me of going, I don't know when my next meal is coming. I don't know if it's going to be fulfilling at all. I don't know if it's, because that's how I grew up. But then you got to go, no, God always provides, like, you still as a grown ass man are scared of not having enough food. You had enough food because you're a grown ass man. If you didn't have enough food, you'd be dead. Like, he always provides. So
absolutely. It reminds me of one of the early episodes that Brandon and I did about, I forgot what we called it. It was like scarcity
of resources.
Yeah, and scarcity of resources. Like, there is no such thing. It just it isn't even true at all, and even it doesn't make any sense. And the whole God providing, it's funny because I think we recently talked about this in a previous episode, where it reminded me, and maybe we didn't. I don't know if I'm remembering this correctly, but I feel like we talked about it. The birds and the flowers. Like, it says it, I think in the book of Matthew, that they don't, it's not like they're out there spinning and making their clothes, and the flowers are well-dressed and the birds get fed, like, and they don't worry. They don't store up grains and stuff. So it's like, why are you worrying about what's coming tomorrow when you, God always provides? So that, it's just, it reminds me of that.
Yeah, I think two things that you said that I really like. I mean, you said a lot that I really like, but two things I could focus on. One is, we talk about on the show a lot how to never really take things personally. You know, I read that once in this book and it blew my mind years ago. I think it was the Fifth Agreement. And it just was basically telling you how everybody that you interact with, they have kind of like a movie going on in their head, and you're just a character. So they don't know the real you, even if it's your mother, father, somebody really close to you. They don't know, because I think a lot of people are under this misconception, you know, I know myself, so this person must think this too, and then they're just trying to hurt me. Whereas you said, though, I think it really goes back to people just being traumatized as children. And in my life, as I started to let that go and not take things personally, and then even put it on a bigger, bigger proportions, like you were talking about what happened like two and a half years ago, when that first started happening, I was losing my mind. And I was like, oh, you know, these people, all these evil people, they're trying to control the world and they just want everything for themselves. And that could be true on one level, but at another level, it's the same thing. Most of these people, I think, are just damaged people. That's why they're able to be controlled so well. So once I started to let that go, I realized that I didn't have to be a victim anymore. And I think that's really the key, is to not look at yourself as a victim in any situation, unless, of course, like I said before, you're getting physically attacked, then maybe you're a victim. But if somebody says something or does something and you feel slighted, you just have to remember that they have, like you said, maybe they're just trying to preemptively hurt you so you don't hurt them, or they're just trying to build this wall where you don't get too close to them so they don't really realize what's going on. They are just like children, and that's something that's helped me so much. I really just look at most people like they're five-year-olds in an adult body, and I know that sounds really condescending, but as I start to do this, it helps me so much, because then somebody does something and I don't automatically think, oh, they just did that to hurt me. Because that really comes from a mind of like, you know, I'm the center of the, it's like solipsism, like I'm the center of the universe. I'm God, really. And everyone here is just for my entertainment. And if they don't do what I want to do, or if they don't do what I want them to do, then this is all going to go wrong. And when you start to let go of that control, and like you said, you just kind of trust the plan, it's so much better. Because like you were saying, when you're trying to control things, it's just because you're coming from a place of fear. You're just afraid that if things don't go your way, then you're either going to get hurt or you're not going to get what you want. And just like that song says, you don't always get what you want, but you get what you need. And, you know, I just said fear, and fear is really, I mean, I'm really starting to think this whole realm revolves around fear, because we've talked about this. This is something I was thinking about yesterday, Sharon. You know, yeah, I told that story on here before, how I got swept out. I was in Ocean City I wasn't even swimming. I was up to my knees, not even. And a wave came in and just the sand under me disappeared, and I got pulled out into this crazy riptide, and the water was the waves were over my head, and I couldn't touch bottom anymore. And I remember this exact point where I started to panic, and I said to myself, well, either I'm going to die or I'm going to get through this. And if I panic, it's not going to help. So I just kind of pushed it down and I just tread water. It's all I could do. Tread water time. And then I just hit the sandbar. That was in the middle of these waves. It was like a couple hundred yards out. I was able to just walk back on the sand. And what I was thinking was, what if I somehow the realm manifested that for me because I wasn't afraid? You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, all right, here's your way out. This was your test or whatever it was. So like Moses, I parted Ocean City, you know, like allegedly. But yeah, I think that a lot of these stories that are contained in the Bible or even other religious texts are there to remind you that it wasn't just for those people back then, but that stuff is applicable now, and especially with fear. And I, you know, a lot of the stuff we've been coming across recently about like resets and all the stuff that's happening, and the people are just saying, just don't have fear. Like even in Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot was spared. He was fine. You know, I mean, his wife didn't work out that well. She was still attached, I guess, to that old world.
He was attached.
Yeah. But if you don't have that attachment or that fear, I think that there's really nothing that can hurt you. And again, we've said this before, you're going to die one day anyway. So that's really the worst thing that can happen is that you're going to die. So that's something that you made me think of by talking about that whole fear thing and stuff. So, yeah.
Dude, 100%. You can't give offense. You can only take it.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah.
You really, offense is not something that's transferable between one person to another. You have to make a conscious decision to take that and personalize it. And that has helped me tremendously in this life is realizing, you know, someone who's out there can play, oh, that I'm offended by that. I take offense to that. And I'm like, well, stop taking it then. Like, it's that easy. I didn't do shit to you. I said the truth. The sky's blue. I don't care if you're mad about it. It doesn't mean that the sky's not blue. Truth is truth. But yeah, fear is what drives everything, man. And it's really like, fear is a weird one because you realize that it doesn't even really exist or make any logical sense in any way. And when you really dive into it, I wrote another really long letter to Owen that I'm going to send out today. That's all having to do with depression and anxiety. But there's elements of fear associated with that as well. Anxiety, like one way to, there's so many different ways to look at it, right? But anxiety is like you're living in the future. You're in a time that doesn't even exist. You have no control over it. It's completely unknown. So you feel your body goes into panic mode and then you get anxious. And I think depression is when you're comparing yourself to the past, but then again, the past is gone and you can't change anything about it. Right. But in there, there's fear. It's like you get depressed because you're thinking about things that made you scared in the past or caused you trauma or something, and then comparing it to today. And if you're living in the future, then you're also in fear because so this element of fear, I think, is like the most powerful weapon that the enemy has. And there's a reason that the Bible tells us 365 times to have no fear over and over and over again. And then we all walk around all day long, just scared of everything. And it's like, there are things that I would consider to be like rational fears. If you have children, you shouldn't be scared, but you should. This is so hard to explain.
Is it like preparedness, maybe?
Exactly. There's like a difference there. There's a difference, but like this stuff that you see today with all these phobias and stuff, where it's like, oh, I'm scared of the color purple. Shut up. Like, none of this makes sense. And it's like, that's not nature. That's not natural. You should not be scared of these things, but you live like, do these people ever just take a minute and just go, is it really me? Or is it this world that we're living in that's just completely fabricated to put fear into you and just to cause anxiety and that adrenaline drip? I mean, I'm such a deep thinker. Like, I get into thinking about when I go to the grocery store and I hear songs on the radio that are 20, 25 years old. And I go, why are these playing? First off, why is there music playing, period? Second, why is it not like calming, you know, like either like some ambient soundscapes type stuff or some old classical music or something that really mellows you out and gets you into like a really tranquil place. And then you go, oh, because we have nostalgic emotions tied to trauma. So if you had something as a child, you know, say you're 7 or 8 years old that happened in your home that just wrecked you, you know, shattered that inner child inside of you. And Matchbox 20 song was playing 48 times a day on the radio, and that's all you had to listen to back then. Then when you go to the grocery store as a full grown adult and you hear that song, no matter how hard you try, for a split second, you're transported. You time travel right back to when you were a kid and you used to hear that song all the time. And all of that trauma kind of resurfaces for a little bit. And I really do think it's by design, because it's like, you hear a lot of this happening, you know, parents will be going grocery shopping after work and they're stressed out and tired and they got to go home and cook and take care of their kids. And then, oh, while you're stopping in at the grocery store for eggs, let me remind you that your dad traumatized you when you were a kid real quick before you go home. It's all designed to just create that adrenaline drip and create fear and panic. And I just, you know, and then we don't even know how to healthily process that at all. You know, they throw you on some medications and call you crazy. And the whole thing is just insane, man. We don't know how to process that fear or even like harness it and use it effectively. You know, when you see an animal, if you see a gazelle escape a lion, you know what they do immediately afterwards? They shake. They go into like,
we just talked about this in a previous episode.
Did you? Yeah, that's so funny.
It hasn't come out yet.
Yeah, they go into like a state of like almost suspended animation and they just shake for like 10, 15 minutes. And they've done actual studies on this and found that not only are they literally, they're clenching their muscles, right? Contracting and releasing, which is helping them get rid of all the adrenaline that's pumping through their body.
Right.
But also while they're doing that shaking, they're not aware of what's happening around them. You can walk right up on them and they won't even see you. They've done studies on the brain and found that there's just an explosion of these neural pathways in their brain, because what they're doing is they're taking every second, everything that they saw, everything they smelled, every rock, where it was positioned, how far do I have to jump to get over this stream? And they're processing it all and creating these new neural pathways in their brain. So the next time that it happens, they're better prepared to outrun that lion. We don't do that, but that's natural, right? Like, take a kid who gets scared and what do? They shake and they're crying and they're trying to process it for a couple minutes. But then you become so calloused in this world that you don't even do that. You don't even attempt to the fear triggers are always going to be there, but you can overcome them and you can, you know, process and then dispel of them. That's how it should be. I think that we should have, just as we eat food and then we shit it out later, we should do so with trauma and emotions and stuff. It's like, observe them and try to learn from them, because a life without any adversity or trauma or, you know, scary times, is there's no lesson in that. There's nothing that you can gain from that. So yeah, that was such a long rant. I don't know why I went on that, but
totally fine.
That's that was great. Yeah. And that kind of reminds me, I want to say really quickly, because I've heard Crow and a couple other people say how this is the only realm, or like, humans are the only ones that have free will. Like, angels don't have free will, allegedly, and neither do animals. And I was thinking of that because, so the animals don't really have a choice. They survive. So they're just in this mode and then they go and they process it. Well, with humans, it's different. We have that choice, and we probably don't realize it subconsciously. We just choose to engage in escapism. So instead, whenever our trauma gets triggered, or if we go through something traumatic, we might turn to the bottle, we might smoke something, we might go engage in sex or something, or whatever it is to get our mind off it, just watch TV and not process that. And it just gets pushed down. And what you said about the grocery store music was crazy, because think about it, if they want to sell more groceries, why not trigger your trauma? Because then you're probably going to want to buy more comfort food, or you're going to think of when you were younger and like you used to get yelled at, but you always had those Twinkies, man. I always had those Twinkies, you know, or Freeze Pops, like those Choco Tacos, I guess they stopped making them. People are losing their mind right now. It's like become memes. I'm just like, what is going on, man? That stuff is horrible for you. Disgusting. I mean, I'm not judging if you're eating it, but like, it's like,
I don't even know what they are, but I can imagine.
It's like an ice cream taco.
Oh,
what you're saying is 100% legit. And it's like, when I say this world is fabricated to induce adrenaline and chaos, it really is. I watched an interview with an old programmer from Facebook when Facebook was first up and coming. And he was talking about how they did countless hours of research and trial and error to try to figure out which colors put together would create the most anxiety in people. And they settled on this very specific shade of blue for the header on Facebook. And then the red that pops up when you have the red and the blue together, the those two specific contrast. Shades, yeah, the contrast between them creates a sense of urgency and panic in your brain, so that you have, you immediately go to click on the notification. And that is this negative feedback loop of going, I see a red dot. Somebody could have said something bad about me, right? And Facebook's been around for like 10, 12 years now. And that's how a lot of people have grown up. But even me, I think Facebook came out when I was right before I was out of high school is when it came around.
I think when it first started around.
Yes. So I graduated in 06. So it would have been right then. But you see that everywhere now, like everyone's using the red notifications because it makes you panic. And people don't realize that when you're sitting on your phone all day long, constantly in a state of, panic and like anxiety, like feeling anxious because, you know, oh, I got a notification, it could be bad. That's not healthy. And it's fabricated. It's all fabricated. They want you to feel that way.
That's infuriating.
Yeah, it just keeps you addicted to their platform at the end of the day, so they could just make more money. It's funny how a lot of people look at the world in this nefarious way, but it's like it just comes down to mostly people trying to make more money. And then they don't care. They're like, oh, it's fine. They justify it in their own brain because of whatever happened to them when they were younger, basically. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. And the scary thing is that it's so inverted, because I made this joke on Pat Life podcast yesterday, and I'll say it again. Ever since I was about 15 years old, I always used to say, like, you know, the problem with the world is that nobody has to fight a fucking bear anymore. Like, because back in the day, that was a very real threat, right? And you think about today, it's like people no longer have, that's what I would consider a rational fear, right? I have to go 30 miles into town through this forest on this rickety old cart that is full of bears and mountain lions and cougars and everything. That, you know, you still shouldn't be fearful, but that's what I would consider a rational fear, because the chances of you dying are much higher than any other time in your life. But we don't have to ever deal with that anymore. So, but at the same time, it's almost like we're more terrified of a little red bubble that says 5 or 6 in it because of what that could mean. And then it's like, what does that even mean? You know, some random internet stranger that's probably a bot anyways, because the internet is dead and 80% of it doesn't actually exist, doesn't like what you're saying. And it's bizarre. It's really weird. Yeah. How much fear controls us.
Yeah. I think, it's funny too, cause we've been going through this guy, his name is Jason. His channel is called Archaics. And basically the short story about him was he was in jail from like 17 to like 43 in Texas. And while he was there, he discovered that all these old books were there from all the old prisons. They would never throw them away. So there's all these books from the 1800s. Yeah, you should look into it. So he basically spent his whole time reading and just writing down all these data points. And he would just fill up bags and give them to his parents every time they came. And they kept them. So when he got out, he has this whole crazy worldview. But one thing that he says was that they, you know, things that we don't know now is that Cro-Magnon man was way different than they say. Like they had clothes and buttons and tools. They might've actually been a more advanced kind of human, but they were and there was a time though, where there's probably some kind of catastrophe where they were hunted by Neanderthals, and humans were probably hunted and eaten by Neanderthals as well. So we have these primal fears in us, but right now there's really nothing to be afraid of. Maybe getting into a car accident, you know, or I don't know, or maybe getting robbed. But other than that, everybody is pretty safe. But I think what happens is they adjust, and now their fears are, you know, is somebody talking about me on Facebook, or, you know, this person said this about me, or this person cut me off in traffic. And so we're able to get to that primal, like we tap into that primal trauma that I think has just been passed down from generation to generation. It could even be in our brain somehow, some kind of like collective unconscious or however they say it. So I think that's another part of it too, because we're just in the society that's so easy. And I just heard you talking about how weak men create bad times create good men create good times. And it's that whole cycle. And right now we really are in those times where it's like so easy to be alive. I mean, as long as you stay away from all the experimental medical serum and all that crazy stuff. But other than that, it really isn't that tough of an existence physically. I guess it's just really all in our heads. But yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there because the fears are real. The threats to us, and in the past they were just way worse. So I think it kind of taps into that somehow. And we don't know the difference though, because we've never been hunted as humans and eaten by other, you know, humanoids or whatever the heck was going on. But we still have that ancestral trauma within us that gets triggered by like a red dot on Facebook. When you said that, it blew my mind because I remember first having Facebook. And for me, it was a little different. It wasn't always fear, but it was, well, I guess it was like fear of missing out. You know, like, what am I missing out? What's going on? I got to see what everyone's saying or who's talking to me or this chick's trying to get with me or I'm going to get with her, or all this stuff, you know? Yeah, it's crazy when I could have just been outside hiking or something.
Yeah, totally about that whole like Facebook thing, fear of missing out. I was going to say like it, to me, it never felt like I was worried that someone was talking trash about me. It was more of crap. Now I have to catch up on all my unread messages. So that's the annoying, you know, right? And I, you know, it still happens because, you know, now it's not Facebook, it's Telegram. But yeah, it's.
That's why I disappear sometimes in chats for a while, because I realize that this Telegram is great because you can connect with all these people. But I also realize how terrible these things are at the same time, too. You know, so it's like a tool, like we say basically about everything. It's right. Just in how you use it. So sometimes I just have to like let go. And I've seen people do that before, like Burn Bear. He's taken a break before. Other people, you know, have taken breaks. And I think that's such a good idea to do that, because when you are just like, I have a friend who has an Apple Watch, and every time it goes off, he's just like this, no matter what's going on. You know, we could be like watching a lion eat a gazelle and he'd be like, what's again? I'm like, dude, you're what are you? Yeah. So it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. When those...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I just took a couple months break. I mean, I've still been here, but not to the degree that I have been. And I haven't been checking my phone more than a few times a day for a couple months, because I found myself in that same cycle of fear of missing out, which is amplified, you know, 100 times over when you're in such a huge community and there's constantly stuff being put out, constantly new content. You've got thousands of people that you, but that's the beauty of it, is that you genuinely, earnestly want to keep up with what they're doing, because what they're doing is beautiful and you love watching their children grow up and stuff. So there's this weird, I never want to touch my phone again, but then also I love keeping up with people. But yeah, I did that recently for a couple of months. I had to just shut it off and spend time with my kids and play guitar for them and try to figure out what I was going to do with my own life while dealing with neck treatments and stuff. And it's just been a whirlwind, but it's super good for you. Yeah. Like, I highly recommend everybody do it. Take a month and just, you know, maybe check your stuff once a day if you feel the need to, but just go out and be present again.
And that's where we can use things as a tool. Like Brandon and I talk a lot about that, is like, you can't say something is evil in this world, because nothing in this world truly is inherently evil. It's you as a person who puts the intent behind it. So, and I say this a lot, maybe I don't know if I say it on the show, but that intent is everything. Because earlier you were saying something about you can't give offense, you can only take it. And I had this experience one time with this one guy I was talking to. Actually, it was like a year ago, now that I think about it. Where he spiraled on me about the most retarded thing. And I basically said, look, this is what I was telling you. I had read it again. I had zero, there's nothing negative in what I said. And I was being kind to you. And I said, my intention was kindness. It was kind. And he's like, well, I'm offended and I'm this, that, and the other. And I'm like, well, that was not my intention. And he's like, you think it's about intention? It's not about intention. It's about how I take it or something to that effect. And I'm like, you are like, you're gaslighting me, dude. Like, this is total narcissism, but it's okay. I'm just going to dissipate it and let you be right, however you want to be right. And we'll move on. But yeah, needless to say, I don't really speak to him anymore.
Did you try telling somebody the world wasn't around spinning balls? Is that what happened?
No. But no, yeah, I mean, probably close. Maybe it was all related. But
people are trying to get a rise out of anybody that they can in order to get that rush within them, which is why I think that social media has been so detrimental to society in so many ways, because it allows somebody, pre-internet days, if you wanted to get into an argument with somebody, you had to nut up and go find somebody to get into an argument with. And the stakes were much higher, because if that person didn't like what you said, you're getting punched in the mouth, you know, the end. Right. And back then you weren't thrown in prison for 40 years for punching somebody in the mouth. The cops would come up to you and say, you know, maybe that guy shouldn't have mouthed off, you know, like everything was more based back then. But nowadays it's at your fingertips. As much chaos as your heart could ever desire is at your fingertips, and people don't even realize it. And they don't even realize that they're engaging in it. Exactly. And that's the scary thing, is they don't even understand what they're doing. And I wrote that letter to Owen, and I have at this point literally dozens of DMs across multiple platforms, people thanking me and sharing their stories or saying, I've never thought about it that way. I didn't even realize that's what I was doing. But now that I'm looking at myself and my behaviors and my thoughts, it all lines up, and I can't believe I didn't see it that way. Which is really cool to hear and know that I'm, you know, having an impact on people. But then also, it's weird, man. It's weird to realize that so many people have no idea what they're even doing in this life.
Absolutely. And it this whole like discussion that we've had reminds me of something that Brandon and I have been looking into called A Course in Miracles. It's this channeled work, and it's really amazing, but it boils down to forgiveness. A lot of it boils down to forgiveness, but in a very, and we talked about this in a previous episode, but I think, is it the one with, yeah, we talked about it with the episode with Adam. I think it hasn't aired yet. It's actually going to air tomorrow. But as of when this comes out, it will already have come out. But it's episode 24 with Adam, our dear friend. And we talked about this because it really boils down to forgiving yourself. But then at the same time, it's not forgiveness, because there's nothing to forgive. Because like you were saying earlier, and I said in that show, that it reminds me of when St. Paul said, and I forgot what, I think it's not Matthew, because that wouldn't have been a book he wrote. It's chapter 7 of, which book was it? Now I can't remember. But anyway, it's when he says something about like, it's no longer me doing these things. It is the body or something like that. Like when he's trying to explain how he used to feel. And then he's like saying that it's like, he recognizes that it's wrong, but then it's not now that he realizes it, he knows it's not the spiritual him, but it's the body him. Right. So exactly. something to that effect. Right. And so like, because of that, everyone is innocent. They're acting out of like you said, they're children. It's like they're acting almost out of insanity because they don't know what they're doing. So like all this stuff was like resonating with me because of all the things we've been talking about, like the children putting up walls, barriers, like, don't get in here. I'm going to do something to you before you do something to me. I'm just protecting myself. Right. I remember a book that I read back when I was with, when I first started dating the guy that I eventually came to think was a covert narcissist. And he may have not been, but the thing is that whatever moniker you put on it, whatever word you want to use, whether narcissist or whatever you want to say, and I've said it before, but narcissism is kind of on a spectrum. You know, you can have like somebody who's like mildly narcissistic, and you can have someone who's raging, you know. But whatever you want to say, that person was like traumatically abused as a child. That is the basis. That is the absolute basis. So it doesn't matter what name you want to call it. They were emotionally and traumatically abused as children. So they put up all these walls. And it made me think of this book by Alice Miller that I read called The Body Never Lies. Because, and this is so synchronistic too with what's going on with me and some other friends, but like, don't think that your body, no matter what it's doing, don't think that it's not warning you or telling you something. Something huge that has to do, that goes back again, like you said, it all goes back to childhood, a traumatic experience in childhood or something, right? Or something even more recently traumatic, but it always goes back to something that you're not fixing, that you're just letting it be. And you're not going, okay, I need to address that, because it'll express itself somehow on your body, whether pain, whether whatever. And I see you want to say something, so go ahead.
It's just a funny sync, because that's in the letter that I just wrote to Owen about anxiety and depression. Is I said that I use the analogy of your body being like a vehicle, and how everything is fractal, and a lot of what we see in this world is actually based on how our human body functions, and a car engine in a vehicle in general is just like that. And just like your car has a check engine light that says something is wrong. It doesn't tell you exactly what's wrong. You have to put your OBD2 scanner, plug it in, and then it'll give you a specific code, but you have a light, you have a warning light on your dash. It's bright red, warning. We also have that inside of us, but we don't listen to it. So we go, oh, I'm feeling a little tired. I guess, you know, oh, my digestion's a little off. Oh, I've been getting headaches more and more. Oh. And then people act blindsided at 45, 50 years old when they get a cancer diagnosis. And it's like, you had 30 years of your body telling you that something is wrong.
Exactly.
you know, even our emotional state stores in our body. There's a reason why you have trigger points.
Exactly.
You have trauma literally stored in your shoulders, in your neck, wherever it may be that you hold that is stored in there. And I've had acupuncture done in the past where I'll go in and I'll explain what's going on, and they'll hit a certain point in my body. And it's like, it's this needle is the size of a human hair. And it went into my body, you know, half of an inch. And now I am violently weeping on a table, thinking about, you know, like, for instance, like how my dad told me when I was 12 years old that he was embarrassed of me because I was overweight, and all of the trauma that came to me as a child going, it's not my fault. I'm 12. I'm eating the food that you're putting on my plate. I don't know shit about nutrition. I'm sitting here trying to think about Pokemon cards, you know, like I don't care about any of this. But it literally bubbled up. I wasn't thinking about that prior to that appointment. I just went in saying, oh, I'm feeling a little anxious. I don't know what's going on. And he popped some needles in, and then I'm sitting there crying on a table alone in a dark room, thinking about stuff from 25 years ago. Like, we hold this stuff in our body. Mm-hmm. And Present Awareness Bear, Pat Life Podcast, talks about this. He does this kind of work. He gets to the root emotional traumatic things that are being stored in people's bodies by putting them in a state of stress, physical stress, because then it forces you, you know, it causes those things to bubble up. So,
yeah, so many ways of healing those traumatic events that happened in your childhood, and being able to release them. I mean, there's even stuff like sound healing that's going on late these days, like going to a sound bath where they play singing bowls and tuning forks and drums and all these things. And if you think about it, that's in our ancestry, but we choose to think that it's Some people choose to think that it's witchcraft, or it's like, you know, it's like, no, these things were there for a purpose. Why did they go around beating drums around a circle and, you know, doing a drum circle? Why? Because that helps release those emotions. It helps you cleanse. Tuning forks, singing bowls, all these sorts of things.
Yeah. And if you go to Western medicine, I'll just say this really quick. So if you go to Western medicine, all they do is treat the symptoms. They treat your headache, you know, they treat your whatever it is. You have a mole or you have something growing a cyst. They just cut it off. They don't even ask you what you ate that day. You know, like you go in with a headache and they're not even like, oh, what did you eat? I mean, maybe they do now. I haven't been to a doctor like that in years, but yeah, it's crazy. Or if you have back issues, they just want to give you pills and tell you to do this, you know,
or get surgery.
Yeah, I had lower back issues for such a long time, and I just realized all I had to do was stand up straight and stretch a little bit. And now that I've been standing up straight, I'm 6'5 now. I've gained an inch since 2018 to measuring myself. I'm now 6'5. So I don't know what the hell's
going
on.
You were hunching, like, dude.
Huh?
Yeah, hunchback.
Yeah. Well, even when I would like stand up straight, you know, it's just, I think I just decompressed my neck. You know, gained an extra inch somewhere in my spine. I don't know, but yeah.
Amazing.
That's funny.
Speaking of tuning forks.
There you go. Yeah, I wanted to touch on that and just, I find it funny too when people are like, that's witchcraft, because I'm like, this entire realm is frequencies.
Yeah, and exactly.
You just don't know anything about it. Like, I took electronics in high school and I built my own guitar pedals and stuff, and I was all in that world of frequency, and I've played music since I was 12 years old. I got my first guitar, and I'm from a family of musicians, and everything in this life is frequency. The fact that you feel solid is because of frequency, because there's a vibration happening inside of you, causing tiny little pieces to move very fast, you know? But frequency in general, it's like everything all around us is constantly singing. And in the Bible, it tells us that the stars are singing. And if you go on YouTube, do this, people listening to this or watching this, go on YouTube and find the videos of the MIDI sprout, which is, it's this device that was created by these people where you take some patches and you can put them on a plant or anything out in nature. But they'll typically put it on a plant. You stick these patches to a plant. They have wires that come out of them, and then it takes the electrical impulse that plant is putting off, which is nothing more than a frequency, turns it into a MIDI wave, and then you can listen to that MIDI wave as if it were an instrument. It is the most breathtaking, beautiful music you will ever hear. There's a video on YouTube, it's gorgeous, maybe 20 minutes long, where they clip it onto some leaves of this plant on the beach at sunset. And just go listen to it, because you'll cry. Like, it's so beautiful.
What's it called? MIDI what? So I can type it in and find the link.
MIDI sprout.
Sprout. Okay.
Yeah. But just look through YouTube and find those videos. And you realize that everything is always making noise. That's our ego, right? It's like, I don't hear it, so it doesn't exist. No, you just have shitty ears. Like, your ears were designed by the creator to hear what he wanted you to create. It's your ego that's saying, oh, because I can't hear it or see it or feel it or whatever. You know, just like our eyes, they've told us that as far as the light spectrum goes of, you know, we see what, like 2 or 3% of it.
Not
enough. It's like, how many jinn are walking by you every day and you don't see them because your eyes don't pick up that spectrum of light that they're operating at? The same thing with noise, the same thing with, I would say, emotions and the intent and everything. It's
right. Frequency, vibration. It's like, that's a total sink for me right now too, because of the whole, like, what vibes with you? I've been saying that a lot. And like, people that vibe with you. Yeah, because like, you're on a certain vibration technically, and someone else who is, like, you'll be attracted to those people because they'll be on the similar kind of frequency or whatever with you. So you can attract that, right? And there's a thing too where you're not even aware that that's what attracts what's around you that you can't see either. Like, this is just people with people, but like, what about the beings that are around you that you don't, that you're not aware of? And if you're vibing low, shall we say, and maybe that's not the best way to say it, but like, if you're on a vibration that's more negative all the time, then you're going to attract, like you were earlier saying, like these negative beings will come and try to take you and try to take you to their town, you know, yeah. When you're on a vibration or frequency of being positive and you're on this like loving frequency, then you're going to attract that. You're not going to attract the negative stuff. So, totally synced for me right now.
Yeah. We're literally a receiver. That's how I always view it. And I've talked with other, Pat Life about this on his podcast about how when you're born, you have that soft spot in your head where you literally don't have any skull, and that's to take in, you know, whatever's coming from above and help you on your journey in childhood. And I forget the name, but even the name itself of that soft spot in your head is something having to do with connection to the heavens or to God or something. Wow. So I think we're 100% a receiver, and it's like, you have the ability. There's things in this world that exist on certain frequencies, right? And it's not just like this kind of woo-woo, oh, there's demons and jinns, but you can't see them type thing. It's like happiness. You know, like happiness is a frequency. It's a state of being. And you as a, you can tune your receiver to pick up on that. And things like gratitude and joy and forgiveness and empathy and all of these things are things that you can, you have that power. This is your body. You have the power to tune it there, but you have to choose to do that. And you can also choose to tune your body to sadness and panic and fear and hatred and judgment and all of these. All of these words that we use are different frequencies. And that's, people got to understand, that's literally the entire drive of the enemy in this realm, is to lower your frequency, because those things only exist down in, you know, down in this area. They don't exist up here, which is where God wants you to operate. They're only capable of, you're only capable of feeling them down here. And that's why there are those whispers that we joke about in the bear community, right? Like, you're not actually hearing whispers in your head. It's not like that Russell Crowe movie, A Beautiful Mind, where he's hearing stuff in his brain, but they're like, they're subconscious thoughts that are kind of suggested to you in a way where you believe that you had it yourself, and it's long and it's over time, and they just gnaw away at you until before you know it, you're lashing out at the very people that you love the most. And you've lowered yourself down to this level and you didn't see it happening, you know? But yeah, that the frequency thing 100% exists. And it's like, just tune yourself up, because you're missing out on a lot potentially if you're just letting yourself reside down here in the cesspool that is the enemy's, you know, muddy waters.
What you just said about the whole, like, to me, I thought telepathy.
Oh, Sharon, you're the best. That's exactly what I thought. You must have transmitted it.
We did. Because, well, Brandon and I have been talking about this. We've talked about it before, but what you said and the way you said it just made me think of that, because it's not a feel. It's not a hearing of someone like saying something to you in your ear, but there's almost like an intuition or an intuitive feeling that you get that translates to the thoughts or the messages that you're getting. So it reminds me of a Reiki session I recently got with a friend. I'd had Reiki before with someone, and it was an in-person Reiki, but it was okay. I didn't really feel like there was a lot that happened as a result. But I had a recent Reiki session about a week ago or so with a friend, Michelle, and we just had her on the show last week. So that'll air that will have aired already. And it was just an amazing, after the show actually is when I told her, okay, I want a Reiki session now. So we did one the next day, the following day. And she just told me to like, just be aware of things that, you know, they'll might happen in the following days because of the Reiki session and connections I might make and things like that. And the Reiki session was about my intuition. She said, there's something related to my throat chakra and my third eye chakra. And that I was, maybe I needed to open up my mind about how to, maybe I'm not using the right terms, but like being open to how to be more intuitive about things. So I think it was several days later, I was taking a walk outside and I there's this desert area that's right next to where I walk sometimes. And I'm just talking to source and just saying, okay, I'm open to being more intuitive. Like, I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know if I'm going to feel things. I don't know if I'm going to like hear things. But like, I'm open, like, you know, you can start showing me stuff, you know, like don't bring it all at once, but like, don't screw, you know, don't like make my amygdala go crazy or anything. But, yeah, you can start showing me stuff. So I start hearing something in my left ear, like some buzzing sound or whatever. And I look and it's a desert all around right there. And I turn and if I turn my head a certain way, I could hear it. And then if I moved it a certain way, then I would stop hearing it. I'm like, that's weird. And I kept walking and I'm like, I feel like it's following me. Like it. And so I stopped and I listened and then I was like, okay, I guess it's the bugs over there. So I just kept walking and then that noise stopped and I'm like, okay, that's interesting. So I kept walking and then I hear this like screeching, this sound that I hadn't heard before. And I'm like, what's that? And I'm like, okay, I'm on to you, source. It's my hearing. It's something about my hearing. You're showing me something. I turn around and I see this big bird like perched on a rock. And I was like, what? And I pulled my phone out and I turned the camera on and I start recording it. As soon as I start recording it, it starts flying toward me. I'm like, so like, you know, like I nearly dropped my phone. Not really, but like, I'm like, crap, I stopped the camera. I'm like, what's going on? I followed the bird with my eyes to see where it landed. It was so close. It landed so close to me, but was behind a rock, like it's behind a boulder. So I grabbed the camera and I turned it back on and I'm looking for it and I'm slowly approaching it. And then it flies away and I see its tail. It's like a red tail. And I had kind of seen it as it was coming toward me, but this was very obvious. I'm like, that's a red tail. And I'm like, okay. So it flies somewhere and I can't tell where it flew. So I turn my camera back on. I'm still following it, getting closer and closer. And I find that it's perched on a tree now. So I approach, I get closer. It lets me get really pretty close. I mean, I don't know, 20 feet or less. I was able to just get that close and like record it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this thing's amazing. So, but the whole time I'm doing this, I'm like, source, is that you telling me something? Cause I'm like, why did it like come close to me and like, let me do this? Like, why is it letting me do this? So as I'm recording it and it stood there for a good while, I'm like, am I going to stand here all day and record this bird? This is weird. And as I was thinking that, I was like, well, I guess when it's ready to, I guess when I know what I need to know from this experience, it'll fly away. And then it flew away. As soon as I was thinking that, it flew away. So I was like, okay, I get it. Source, you're telling me that you're going to start helping me with my intuition. And maybe it's going to have something to do with my ears and hearing stuff. But then I was like thinking about hearing and I'm like, but isn't hearing things just hearing a frequency, just a frequency that I can hear? But what is frequency? Frequency is also vibration. And couldn't it also be that like I might feel vibration in my body somewhere from whatever the intuition is. I'm like, it's all related. Sound, frequency, vibration. I'm like, mind blown. So yeah, I did not expect to talk about that, but.
No, that's beautiful. I want to touch on two things. First off, that's gravy in itself. Everybody take some time to stew on that, because it is what we hear is just it's a sound wave that goes into our ear. So when you get what you consider intuition, you're feeling the wave come into you, and then your body is processing that as well. That's beautiful. And then also, I think that that's a beautiful story. And I love that you have had experiences like that, as have I, as I'm sure Brandon has as well, and many other people, especially in the bear community, because we're so much more based than everybody else. Joking. But it's sad at times, because a lot of people don't ever have that in their life. And they, you know, I'm a big believer that people are on this earth to learn something, some lesson, something that's going to help you ascend spiritually. And we oftentimes don't see it, but eventually, you know, we'll get little snippets of it, or we'll get that intuition, you know, maybe later in life. And I'm like, I'm 100% sure that my lesson that I'm here to learn this time is patience. Just 100%. I mean, with all of my health issues, the fact that I was just head over heels in love with my wife the minute that I met her, and I had to wait 4 years before she even decided to go out with me. That was the longest 4 years of my life, right? And then wanting children and having to wait 12 years, and just we were not able to have children. And then, you know, it's a constant waiting game for me. I go, I'm 35. I still don't own property. I've been wanting to buy a homestead for 10 years. We've been trying to get up to Northern Idaho for 10 years, long before I even knew who Owen was. We've been trying to get up there because I spent some time up there, and it's still not happening. And it's just, so for me, I'm like, I'm here to learn patience. I have two brothers who are close to my age and still just don't have any work ethic in their body. And I have to, you know, exhibit a lot of patience when I deal with them. And then I look back and I go, it's so funny, because I don't remember what prompted me to put it or where I even found it or who said it, but my senior quote in my high school yearbook in 2006, I wrote, anything worth having is worth waiting for. And like, with time not being linear and not being what we think it is, it's like that could have been me dropping some wisdom from a future me back then, you know.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, giving me something to look back on and really reflect on in those moments where I become impatient, you know, going, bro, you even wrote this when you were 18 or 17. I graduated when I was 17. Like, you're a 17-year-old kid and you even wrote this down. You thought that this was so like groundbreaking back then, but now you're 34 and you're tripping out about some stupid stuff. Like, it's all silly to me, but yeah, I think we're here to learn lessons and yeah, just try to find out what that is, because then you have an easier time, you know, kind of walking the path that was ordained for you this time around.
Absolutely. And speaking of gravy, I meant to say too that I've been reading Eileen McCusick's book, Tuning the Human Biofield, which is related to the tuning forks that I've bought. And I'm only into like the third or fourth chapter, but it's really, really good stuff if people want to comprehend this. She goes into a lot of background about sound, frequency, vibration, all this terminology. She begins to explain it, because she had to explain it to herself first before realizing how this tuning fork can actually help. It's a sound healing device, basically, is what it is. So it's just, it's really, really a good book so far. And I've been trying to get through it because I want to get through it. It's really good.
Well, speaking of more gravy, on that same day, I actually saw a hawk as well. I was hiking with some friends and they're very into spirituality and stuff. And we were having this conversation and all of a sudden out of nowhere, my friends, like, cause we were on this giant rock and there was a stream in there. Then the water was kind of low, but we were up on a really high point, but behind us, we could see, you know, it went up even further. And he's like, "You see that? Is that a hawk?" And we looked in between the trees and we could barely find it. And I had to point it out for my other friend. And then it flew and it landed in a tree like 15 feet from us and just hung out there for like a good 10 minutes. It was just hanging out there. Yeah. And then when it flew down the stream away and it was just basically gliding the whole time. It was like a nature shot from like National Geographic or something. It was amazing. Yeah. So, and then she's like, "I saw a bird." I'm like, "Me too. This is crazy."
Yeah. I actually came to find out because I said it had a red tail. Well, I never said, but I went to look for what a red-tailed hawk looks like, just kind of online picture. And it was pretty much the same type of creature awesome. That I saw. So yeah.
Both saw a hawk.
Yeah. Crazy stuff. Lots of sinks ever since then too. Cause like I was reviewing some old readings that I had done. Well, one that Brandon had done for me. Cause I had this like epiphany of like, we had been talking about how, and this kind of relates to the whole, like, God takes care of everyone type of thing, because we're talking about the birds. The birds don't have like a king bird to tell them what to do. They just do. Right. So, and I had, for whatever reason, that came back up in my memory. So I looked it up in my notes and I found that Brandon had done a reading for me last year on 8/8, which is a week from now, because we're recording, or something like that, because we're recording on your birthday, 8/3. And I went to look at that reading. Well, one of the cards he pulled was the 9 of Pentacles, which is this woman holding a hawk. In fact, I'll pull it up on my book so you can see it. It's just crazy how totally synchronistic that was.
Yeah, it's crazy how this realm works. And I think synchronicities happen to other people. They're just not paying attention to it. They just kind of think it's some kind of coincidence. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So crazy.
Nuts. Well, I know we did also want to talk about your neck, so maybe this is a good time to do it because we've been going for almost 2 hours now. So
yeah, I would love an update on how things are going and how you're feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been getting this new treatment done. There are injections into the vertebral ligaments in your neck. Mine are all elongated from being torn in the auto accident. So they're going good. I'll say it's a net positive with a lot of road, like bumps in the road, you know. I have not had, for about 10 years now, I've had a constant headache that varies in severity, but at times is completely debilitating. And I have not had that in a month and a half now. I've had a couple headaches that were bad, but it's like I can pinpoint where in my neck, like which muscle is locked up tight, you know. And so it's like it's getting better in some ways, but then I also had a month where I couldn't walk. So because as these treatments pull everything back into alignment, it took 15 years for my neck and back to get this bad. So to have it be pulled back into place so rapidly, my whole entire nervous system is like trying to figure out what is happening, and muscles that have been working in a really compensatory fashion for half of my life are now allowed to do what they're supposed to do, which, is funny, but they don't know what to do because they've never had to do that. So it took me about a month to start working or like to start walking again after one of those treatments. But now that I'm walking, everything is great. Like the headaches are pretty much gone. I still have tension in my head. I still have some stuff going on, but I'm sure that that will resolve with future treatments. And beyond that, you know, like touching on what we talked about earlier, the body holding emotional stuff. I was pretty upset that I went to a treatment and then walked out of it. Well, kind of walked out of it and then wasn't able to walk for a month. I had such severe vertigo and my legs were like a baby giraffe. Like they literally just weren't working right because of all the changes. But I always think of everything as a blessing. And that was a blessing as well, because it gave me a month to just sit down and think, and slow down after 3 years of running the wood shop and everything else that I do, to really just sit there and think and, focus on what I want to do with my life and think about a lot of this stuff. Honestly, a lot of this stuff has come up, these kind of revelatory downloads that I've been getting as far as just like compassion for other people and trauma and adrenaline and all this stuff have come in that time as well. So yeah, it's a long road. It's like, I wasn't expecting things to be fixed overnight. But I'm just thankful. It's like after 10 years of having a headache every day, and these aren't like mild headaches. These are like curled up in a ball, you know, sometimes puking, sometimes, you know, as close to a migraine as you can get without it being an actual migraine. So yeah, I'm extremely grateful. I'm really grateful that I'm not having those anymore.
That's so awesome to hear. And it reminded me of the little deer shaking, maybe your month that you were in, you know, and unable to walk was your little deer shaking moment.
You know, what's funny is I actually did that. After that treatment, it was about 4 or 5 days after. So I went to that treatment, that particular treatment. 3 days later, I went upstairs and I went to set something down and I almost blacked out and fell down the stairs. And I couldn't really walk. The vertigo is so bad that I'm gripping onto the couches. I had to have my wife under my arm, right? And about 3 or 4 days after that started, one night I was so panicked and anxious. This was probably close to 2 months ago now. And I ended up going up to bed and just like seizing in bed for like close to an hour. Literally just like not, I don't know. I mean, I've never had like a grand mal seizure or something,
yeah,
you know, but I just ended up like my whole body was like just clenching and then letting go and clenching and like a rocking motion and a shaking motion. And I was not in control of it. And I legitimately like lost, not blackout, not here, but like lost consciousness, like went into a state of like suspended animation, like, you know, like I was saying the animals do. And my wife was just sitting with me on the bed and like, she was terrified. She didn't know what to do, you know? But through it all, I mean, I didn't feel like scared. And when I got done, I felt like I could breathe. And it was like, it felt like a release. Like I had so much tension and so much stress and anxiety built up in me. And it took that one final straw, you know, to finally break it and let me kind of unload a lot of it. And then immediately after that happened, I started getting all these downloads about like how adrenaline works and the connections to childhood trauma and all of this stuff. So everything happens for a reason.
Oh my gosh. It's crazy.
Oh, you're telling me. I was just going to bed. I was just trying to go to bed. And then I started shaking and freaking out, but, yeah, everything happens for a reason. And that's kind of like, man, I've been, as I said, I'm, you know, 34 going on 100. I feel like I've experienced so much and I don't even get angry at stuff like that anymore or try to control it, because every single time something has happened in my life, I look back and I go, oh, that was beautiful that happened. It's just sometimes it takes a few years to get to that point to be able to see why it happened. But
Yeah. What you said reminded me of this. I don't even know what it's called, but it's like a shaking that you do. It's either like my yoga teacher, when I was doing yoga a lot, where I used to work, she would sometimes have us do this, but it's, you basically, you just stand, you know, in the middle of your mat, and then you just shake uncontrollably, however you want, like your head, your arms, your legs, you jump, but it releases a lot of those things. And people don't realize it, but it's very therapeutic to shake. That's why things like dancing and like jumping, rebounding, and those kind of exercise types really help. And sometimes even things like Qigong, and I don't know so much about Qigong, but like Tai Chi, right? Is that the one that,
yeah,
where they kind of like do like really slow?
Yeah.
So sometimes they do really slow movements, but they also do the really fast, jumpy, like letting go. And I think now that I think about it, it makes total sense. Like I should start incorporating that every day or something.
Yeah,
like
kids play are, some kids music are just like bursting with joy at all times, and they're constantly Zumba. Doing that. They're constantly going. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's why kids are so resilient now that I think about it, because they do have these moments where they're just jumping and bouncing around everywhere. And so maybe that's a way that they are able to release some of these things. But if they're not allowed to do those things because how they're raised and, you know, they're always told to shut up and be quiet and stop and all this stuff, then they aren't able to release all that pent up trauma.
100%.
Yeah.
Yep. Crazy. Yeah. If you got a kid stand up in class, instead of asking them what's wrong, they throw them on Adderall. It's like, there's no outlet for it. There's no outlet at all. That's why every day we let our girls go outside, rain or shine, you know, and just let them run for an hour. We go out, you know, when it's nice out, we'll go out a couple times, give them a couple hours outside in the backyard to just run and play and do whatever they want. Play in the pool, chase chickens around, just go out and explore. Cause it's unnatural to stick a kid into a dead sterile classroom for 8 hours a day and then expect them to sit still. That's soul crushing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can sit still in your adult life if you choose to, you know, like I love reading. So I'll sit there for hours on my ass reading a book, and that's fine. But don't do that to a child.
Yeah.
They're here to explore.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. So I wanted to ask you about your, I guess to close it up, since we're pretty much past the 2 hour mark, about, you know, your inspiration for the coloring books and the also the freeze drying process and how that's going, if there's still any activity going on with that.
Yeah. So the freeze drying, there's not, I had planned to continue doing it, but my grandmother is 90 with vascular dementia, and she's failing very rapidly. So my mother came up from Southern Oregon. I'm just outside of Portland here in Oregon. She came up from Southern Oregon and has been staying with us, helping care for a couple months now. And we just had to clear out the space, and it wasn't conducive anymore. Those machines are loud and they put off some serious heat. And we needed that extra bedroom for her to stay. Obviously that's far more important. She's losing her mother. So, but yeah. And then as far as the coloring books go, my inspiration is it's simple. I have two daughters and I went out to try to find coloring books. I went to 5 stores in Portland, and the only things that I found were Disney related. And I went, I remember being a child and like going to Michael's Arts and Crafts, and they had rows of coloring books, and it was animals and horses, whatever you wanted, there was a coloring book for it. And they don't have that now. Simple things like that are disappearing, and my options were like Disney Frozen type stuff or Trolls or whatever. So I went, like, this is how just crazy I am. I was like, I can't find a $5 coloring book, so I'm gonna go buy a $1,600 iPad and just make my own. And I did. And it's like, I bought the iPad and then I had to teach myself how to draw digitally, which I've never done. I'm a hyper realistic portrait artist with charcoal and graphite and stuff. And I've been drawing my whole life, but I've never used a tablet like that. So I had to teach myself a new skill. And then I had to teach myself how to format that book for publication. Then I had to teach myself how to use Amazon KDP so that I could sell them on Amazon. But it's like, once I got started, I was just hammering them out.
You did.
Because you I did it
like instantly. I was blown away. I'm like, wait, another book? Wait, another book? What?
I literally, I would spend like 4 or 5 days just doing these illustrations. And then once I figured out how to do all the formatting of the books and everything and submitting them for publication, it was just a matter of making the, the illustrations. So I just sat there all day drawing and I had so much fun. And my inspiration is just simply like put beauty into the world and give another option, because it doesn't do any good to complain if you're not doing anything to like make an alternative. You know, this is what Owen has talked about forever. And this is how I've always been, is like, I could have complained about coloring books, but instead I chose to go spend like almost $2,000 on this new thing so that I could make my own. And it might seem crazy, but then you go, I've sold many hundreds of them at this point.
So awesome.
How many people
paid for itself?
The iPad is paid for itself at this point. And how many people's children have these coloring books now that are just homestead images or pictures of flowers and not, you know, gravel Disney stuff. And that profit didn't go into Disney's pocket. It went into my pocket. And then I always turn around and use that to help further support the community. You know, like the community supported me in a huge way recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to give back to that. I mean, I have since day one. I've been purchasing for other bears and helping every way that I can with other people's fundraising needs and stuff. And that's just, it's what you have to do. So like the freeze drying foods was along that same train of thought, right? Like you can go buy a Mountain House meal and you can eat your GMO Roundup, you know, filth inside of it. Or we could just buy a freeze dryer and do that and put nothing but like quality organic ingredients in it. And I'm sure I'll have many more ventures, because that's just how I am. Like I am a wild spirit. I can't be cooped up in a cubicle all day. I got to get out there and try. And my next venture is, it's funny, we talked about this at the beginning, but like I'm gearing up mentally to start writing books. I've already started researching. Yeah. I've already started doing all this. And I don't know if it's going to necessarily be pertaining to adrenaline and addiction and stuff. I'm a huge fantasy guy. I have been since I was a child. I love like Lord of the Rings and stuff. And I like the world building and the magic aspect of it. But I want to do something like that, that really, really weaves in some high morality and logos and really valuable lessons. And I've been rereading the Narnia books recently. And dude, C.S. Lewis drops so many nuggets of just pure beauty and truth in there. And it's even more so when you have eyes to see and you have so much life experience. But that's how you combat this stuff, man. It's like, you can sit there and complain about it all, but it's like when your kids' options of which books they're going to read are The Hunger Games, which is about a bunch of children killing each other, or The Maze Runner, which is about a bunch of children killing each other when there's a virus around, you know, scary virus. It's like, give them another option. Give them something that has like really high morality and is still engaging in world building, because that was such a integral part of my childhood and my upbringing, when I felt like my entire world was like crashing down around me because my parents were separating and nothing made sense. And, you know, parents separating is a big thing. It's not superficial. And we talk about it when we get into adulthood as if it were, but as a child, that's life. Like that is all, you know, that is the structure of life, is that there's a mother and a father and you are the children and they're supposed to protect you. So to see that break apart and crumble is like everything you ever thought was supposed to be is no longer necessarily true. So I really, fantasy books were huge for me when I was younger, like reading Tolkien books and stuff. They allowed me to almost like escape for a minute into a like beautiful world where awesome stuff was happening. And I would like to do that. So that might be priority one for me, is to start writing a series like that. And it'll be aimed at like young adults, but children can read it, and hopefully adults will get a lot out of it as well. And I would like to make it big. And I just recently found out that my uncle, his wife is one of the highest up people at Barnes and Noble. I never knew that. So I'm going, wow. I'm going to write a book, and then hopefully I can take up some shelf space from a lot of the filth that is in that store.
We're going to make it happen. You will. This is happening. I love it.
Yeah. I'm really excited about it.
Super.
That's
awesome.
Amazing. Well, yeah. I think that's a good place to stick a fork in this. I just want to tell you, if you ever want to do a show or talk about the Silmarillion or anything J.R.R. Tolkien, let me know, because I went through a massive deep dive last year and the beginning of this year, re-listening to all them. I can't read as easily as I used to. For some reason, my body just doesn't get comfortable, but I listen a lot now. Some things I'll read, but yeah, what a fascinating world and mind that guy had.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just want to thank you for sharing all of this, for oversharing everything. That's great. I mean, we're the type of people to overshare. Like, we did episodes about death, and Sharon talked about her husband who passed away, and I've talked about close friends, and we're really okay with that. So that's why we like to have people on just like yourself who aren't afraid to overshare. And it was amazing. So I'm really glad that we reached out to you and had you on. And
I want to ask him if he can tell us like where people can find his books on Amazon, his coloring books.
Oh yeah, yeah, good call.
And just things like that, so that we can put the links in the description as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you guys again for having me on. This was a pleasure. Absolutely. For all of my coloring books, you can find them on Amazon. If you just search for Woodshop Bear, just as my name says here. I have 4 children's coloring books available on there. And then I also have a wood shop that I run that I'm currently overhauling as far as inventory and repricing things goes. But you can find that at littlebearwoodshop.com. And then you can find me on Beartaria Times app. I'm Woodshop Bear on there. I am on Instagram. My handle there is Woodshop Bear, but that one I keep a little more closed up because I've had my fair share of trolls and people trying to get my thing nuked, and I don't play that game anymore. So,
yeah.
But bear people, if you recognize them,
yeah. If I know you, and even if I don't, if you write me a message and there's some way that I can vet you, or I just get a good vibe about you, yeah, I have no problem if you follow me. But I recently had a lot of spam reporting of pictures and videos of my children, and I was not into that at all.
Oh,
so
hex no.
Yeah, I don't play that game.
No, homie, don't play that.
Nope.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Beartaria Times app is always the best place. If you're not on there yet, just spend the $15. Do it. It's so worth
a
it.
A year. Yeah.
Yeah. A year.
It's exactly. A game changer.
Yeah, it really is. Especially if you're even if you're gonna start a business or something. I mean, the people on there are so supportive. And it's great to be able to scroll through something and know that you don't have to worry about what you're going to see. Like every time I'm on Instagram, I'm like, I got to like scroll fast past certain things or whatever, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have a silly question for Woodshop Bear.
Go ahead.
On Beartaria Times, you have a green check mark, which very few people have. I'm just wondering, how does one get the green check mark? Not that I want one or anything.
Truthfully, not just saying this, I don't know.
Isn't that funny? I asked Wanderlust Bear the same thing, and she's like, I don't know.
I think I heard it said, man, maybe a year ago now, because it's been a while since that app came out, that green check marks might have something to do with people that are seen as like kind of encompassing values that we find important in the community or something, but I have no idea. I didn't ask for one. I just had one. I made an account and then I had a green check mark. I don't know who gave it to me or where it came from or anything.
The mods,
like that.
Whoever the mods are.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea. I'm like, I'm connected in some ways because I'm an editor at the magazine itself, BertariaTimes.com, but I'm not like connected to everything. So
yeah. Okay, cool. Well, thank you.
Great question, Sharon. We'll get to the bottom of this one day.
We're going to sleuth.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll find out. Right. Maybe at the Bear Fest. We'll
yeah. There out. You go. You're going to the Bear there Fest. You maybe you can get your check mark from singing or whatever. Oh, no. Did I? Anyway. So thank you, everybody. Thanks to the chat. Thank you guys for hanging out this whole time. If you are watching this sometime in the future, every Thursday night, we premiere these episodes at 8:33 Eastern Standard Time. And we hang out in the chat, and it's always really a good time. The past few weeks have been great. We've had like around 20 people in there, which is awesome because we started out with like 5 in the beginning. So it's great to have like 20, 25 people in there just hanging out, and people are sharing their experiences in there. And the ways to support us, like I said, go to morelawsmoreproblems.com, click on the Over Sharon tab, and there's several different ways to support us. But the best way, as I said in the beginning, is to just leave a comment under this video. Or wherever you're listening to this. And the really best way is to hang out with us every Thursday night or whenever you can and just come out in the chat. So thank you guys live so chat. Much. Yeah, right in the live chat. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, Nick. This has really been awesome. I'm really excited. Yes. And what do we say to the good people, Sharon?
That if you're not over sharing,
then you're totally not caring.
That's right.
So keep sharing. See you guys next week.
Share.